I say this to everybody in your position. It's so peripatetic. I don't know how you do it. How do you keep track of where you're going and what you're doing next? And
part of it is to look not too far ahead, frankly. You really have to live in the week or the two of the preparation for the concerts that is coming, which is not to say that you don't study your score for months in advance, but you just have to line things up so that you are allowing yourself that focus time, that time to really get into the mindset of, I have this specific repertoire that I need to conduct in this weekend, and I need to prepare myself for it and need to be ready, essentially, to conduct a really fine performance of the work at the first rehearsal. Because if you think about it, all of your musicians are showing up, and they've put in their hours of individual work to hone and fine-tune their music.
And you don't have that much time with them, really.
Precisely. So most American orchestras get 3 rehearsals and a dress rehearsal to perform a symphonic concert. And then in most cases, on the pop side, it's anywhere between 1 or 2 rehearsals to prepare for a concert.
And how would that compare, because you said American, how would that compare with European orchestras, for
instance? Well, the European orchestras I've worked with will generally have at least 5, if not 6 or 7 rehearsals for every symphonic performance. So it's a different mode of working. It's a different style of working. It's more of a punch-the-clock type of thing. But that's not to say that they're not also very well prepared for the first rehearsal. It's just that it's understood that we can grow more with this piece, we can live with it longer, and we have an opportunity, frankly, to turn over a few more stones over that course.
Right. I'm guessing most conductors would like to have that.
It's a great
much
way
time
to work.
With
it's a great way to
orchestras.
Work. And part of it has to do with the fact that those orchestras are state supported, so they are indeed, you know, full-time positions where you can make a living wage working with one orchestra.
That's a huge difference. I mean, that's a huge difference in a model of a symphonic world.
Well, the flip side here in the United States is that the musicians here have to be a lot more on the ball and ready at the first rehearsal. So when I work with American orchestras, particularly really good ones like the Portland Symphony, it's likely that most of the musicians will have already been chipping away at this music for 3-4 weeks in and around all the other music that they have to perform in their other ensembles. So the happy thing is that in that first rehearsal, you actually can start to delve behind the notes and make some music and not just cross T's and dot I's and make sure that everything's firing at the right time.
I want to ask you specifically about this weekend's concert. It's Rodgers and Hammerstein, and I know you've had some experience with Rodgers and Hammerstein. Did you conduct Carousel?
I did, yes. And I mean, any good pop season has an American Songbook or a classic Broadway program, at least in my estimation, because that's the golden era. That's the era where great composers and great lyricists were married to great performers and created these amazing works of art that keep giving generation after generation. And so I think it's important to marry that idea with a really fine performer who also gets it. And Lisa Roman is one of those. She sang Christine on Broadway over 2,000 times in Phantom of the Opera. I mean, she's got the Broadway chops that most people would love to have. But she also has this incredible sensibility of the history of Broadway and the history of how Cole Porter and George Gershwin then filtered into Richard Rodgers and then influenced Stephen Sondheim and Leonard Bernstein and then ultimately then moves into the next generation, including Andrew Lloyd Webber. I mean, there's a thread there of people who love the craft of putting together a great song, but also the craft of shaping a drama that has a significant through line so that it hangs together from beginning to end. I just had the great pleasure of conducting Bernstein's Candide last weekend with the Erie Philharmonic. And as wonderful as that score is, the story is really hard to pull off because it's pastiche. It's really a little bit of this and a little bit of that, and okay, and now all the characters died, and oh, we somehow resurrected, and we're back again. And of course, there's the laugh that comes with that. But ultimately, it's much harder of a show to hang together than something like a West Side Story or a Carousel that has a very finely and smartly crafted story with brilliant and probing lyrics, and then the music to match.
Do you have a favorite? No, I'm even going to make it harder than a favorite musical. Is there just one song from a musical, a Broadway musical that just really, really resonates with you more than others?
Yes.
I'm impressed. You do. What is it?
And it's because I saw this when I was a kid, and then I had the great fortune of returning to this part of the world on a number of occasions, and it always just makes a big impact on me, especially when I climb a mountain. So it's The Sound of Music from The Sound of Music, when Julie Andrews just rushes up the hillside and starts spinning around, and she's embracing the world. She's opening herself to anything that might come to her. And she's in the most beautiful place you can imagine in the earth. I'm a mountain guy. And I just, for me, that's my moment. And that music just always chokes me up a little bit when I hear it, because it reminds me of my childhood and that those first discoveries of that great music. But it also reminds me of what a special part of the world those Alps are.
And the hills really are alive. You know, it is an iconic moment, I think, not just in Broadway and then later in filmmaking. It's just an iconic moment.
And I mean, on the face of it, that is it could be the most syrupy, sappy, silly thing to say. The hills are alive with The Sound of Music. But Richard
Rodgers
did it.
Not when it's filmed in the Alps,
right?
Though, right?
Not when it's filmed in the Alps and not when Richard Rodgers sets it to music. Then it becomes one of the most brilliant and meaningful moments in musical theater history, to my estimation.
So then we can assume Lisa will be singing The Hills Are Alive with The Sound of Music.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. And she's brought some things to me that I didn't know, Rodgers and Hart, and just some wonderful things of Sondheim and even a new work. So there'll be a generous supply of Rodgers and Hammerstein on this program, but also some slightly off the beaten path things and things that really resonate with Lisa. And I love talking with her about putting a show together, because she has such great ideas and she has such creativity in the way that she wants to present herself and the way that she wants to lead the audience through this brilliant mind for how great music. So I hope that the audience feeds off of this love fest, because I truly do. I admire her deeply, and I care for her a lot, and I think she's just one of the most wonderful interpreters of this music.